America's Suez Moment. Welcome to this audio issue of Porter's Daily Journal, published and copyrighted by Porter & Company, all rights reserved. Please note that this recording was generated via AI and may contain minor transcription errors and pronunciation mistakes. Throughout this issue, I may reference charts, graphs, and imagery that can only be viewed on our website at porterandcompanyresearch.com. Issue number 63, volume number 3, What Comes After the Petrodollar, inside today's Daily Journal. Essay: America's Suez Moment. ESG falls out of favor, tech revives U.S. manufacturing, AI consumes S&P, and debt market chart of the day. Kinsale Capital Reader Poll. Warsh and interest rates. Today's mailbag editor's note: although Erez Kalir ordinarily focuses on technology, blockchain, and biotech issues in Porter & Company's Tech Frontiers, Porter turned over the journal to him today so Erez could tell the story of the longer-term consequences: the extended closing of the Strait of Hormuz, erosion of the supremacy of the U.S. dollar, and the Trump administration's inability to stop it. In the fall of 1956, the British Empire learned, in the most painful way imaginable, that it was no longer in charge. The immediate trigger was Egypt's decision to nationalize the strategic Suez Canal, the narrow artery through which nearly all of Europe's oil flowed. For Britain, the canal was not merely an economic asset, but the connective tissue of an empire, the link between London and the Middle East, India, and beyond. British Prime Minister Anthony Eden responded the only way a fading empire knows how: with force. In late October, Britain, France, and Israel launched a coordinated military operation to regain control of the Suez. Militarily, the operation succeeded. Financially, it was a catastrophe. The United States, Britain's most important ally, refused to support the invasion. Worse, Washington undermined Britain using the one weapon that mattered most: the dollar. At the time, Britain still clung to the illusion that its currency, pound sterling, remained the global reserve. But sterling's position as the world's dominant currency had been eroding for decades, losing ground to the ascendant U.S. greenback. And in this crucial moment of geopolitical crisis, Britain depended on foreign capital to support sterling stability in the foreign exchange markets. When President Dwight Eisenhower signaled that U.S. support for sterling would be withdrawn, the rest of the world's capital followed. Sterling collapsed. Britain's foreign reserves evaporated. And within weeks, Prime Minister Eden was forced into a humiliating Suez withdrawal. Historians often describe Suez as the end of the British Empire. That's not quite right. Empires rarely end in a single moment. But Suez was the moment the world saw, unmistakably, that Britain could no longer enforce the system that underpinned its power. And once the world sees that, it can't be unseen. The rise and fall of empires. Ray Dalio, founder of the world's largest hedge fund, Bridgewater Associates, has spent decades carefully studying the rise and fall of empires: the Dutch, the British, and now the American. Dalio's framework is both intuitive and powerful. In the beginning, an ascending power's naval strength protects key trade routes. Controlling key maritime trade routes makes a nation's currency the one everyone wants to use. Reserve currency status enables that nation to borrow from the rest of the world more cheaply. Cheap borrowing helps reinforce the nation's military strength, and so the loop closes. An empire's decline works through a feedback loop, too. As a dominant power borrows more, it becomes complacent, believing it can continue to borrow in perpetuity. Its debt mushrooms. At a certain juncture, the cost of maintaining the military that catalyzed the empire's ascent begins to become painful, then prohibitive. Foreign creditors begin to question the currency. The currency's reserve status erodes, causing borrowing costs to rise, and the military weakens. The empire falls into a terminal decline. In this downward spiral, the crucial moment isn't when the hegemon weakens, it's when the world realizes it has weakened. The Strait of Hormuz. All of which brings us to what is unfolding today in the Strait of Hormuz. As everyone who isn't Robinson Crusoe knows, the Iran war has led to the closure of the strait, through which roughly 20% of the world's oil transits. But as I discussed in detail in the April issue of Tech Frontiers, Hormuz is a critical choke point for far more than oil. Approximately 20% of the world's liquefied natural gas, LNG, flows through it, along with over 20% of seaborne nitrogen fertilizers, on which the global food supply depends, and more than 30% of the global helium market, an essential, little-known input for the fabrication of the advanced memory chips that power the artificial intelligence, AI, build-out. Embarrassingly for the U.S., the Strait of Hormuz was not closed before we launched this war. Iran shut it in response to our attack on February 28, making its closure what soccer players call a colossal own goal, points we ourselves scored for the other team. And now, over 6 weeks after we initiated the conflict, we've belatedly discovered that reopening the strait is really hard, even with the world's most expensive and technologically advanced military. Last week, A mere 19 hours after President Donald Trump posted on Truth Social that Iran had promised to keep the strait permanently open as an outcome of peace negotiations, Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corp, IRGC, forces fired live ammunition on two civilian tankers seeking to transit the strait, forcing them to turn around. How the Hormuz closure hurts the dollar order. The Hormuz crisis, which the U.S. precipitated, is causing devastating injury to the dollar system in at least three ways. 1. The world is seeing, in the most painfully visible way imaginable, that the U.S. can't keep the most important maritime trade route in the world open. The three aircraft carriers we have dispatched to the Persian Gulf, which cost U.S. taxpayers about $13 billion each to build, no match yet for the credible threat posed by the IRGC's cheap drones and Mosquito fleet of fast-attack speedboats. The U.S. financial backstop meant to stabilize the maritime insurance market for Hormuz transit hasn't returned insurance rates anywhere close to their pre-conflict levels. Most importantly, vessels still simply aren't transiting. 2. The Hormuz closure is wreaking havoc on the economies of U.S. allies. Europe, Japan, Korea, India, and large parts of Asia depend on energy flows implicitly secured by U.S. naval power. When these flows come to a sudden stop, their economies suffer, and for several of our key allies, the economic damage is rapidly becoming a bona fide crisis. When the dust settles, and even before, the inevitable conclusion our allies will draw is that their reliance on the Pax Americana and the dollar system at its foundation made them vulnerable, not strong. 3. A boost for China's currency. The final development may be the most important, because during the first 6 weeks of the war, while virtually all U.S. allied vessel transit across Hormuz was halted, one other category of vessels continued to move smoothly: Chinese shadow fleet tankers carrying Iranian crude, which China paid for in renminbi, RMB, not dollars, and settled using its own bespoke SIPS payment system, not the U.S.-backed, dollar-based SWIFT. The Trump administration belatedly realized that allowing Iran to facilitate Hormuz transit for Chinese vessels while zeroing out U.S. allied vessels was a really dumb idea. We accordingly implemented our own naval blockade, effectively conceding that if we couldn't reopen the strait, we would at least close it for everyone, including China. But for over a month, the world got a striking, real-time demonstration of renminbi-denominated oil flowing seamlessly while dollar-based oil was totally stuck. That proof of concept for renminbi-denominated oil is not one the world is likely to forget. This alone is not going to lead to the replacement of the dollar, but it's a sign of the slow erosion of the dollar's dominance both as a reserve currency and as a medium of exchange. America's response. U.S. policymakers aren't blind to China's strategy. And recently, the U.S. response has begun to coalesce around two important pieces of our own, each of which can be understood as a way of updating the fading petrodollar. The first is what we might call the crypto dollar. Stablecoins, dollar-backed, blockchain-based digital assets, are extending the reach of the dollar into every corner of the global economy. Every unit of stablecoin requires backing in U.S. treasuries. Every transaction therefore reinforces the dollar's role as the unit of account. And because stablecoins operate outside traditional banking systems, they reach populations and markets that the old system never could. Stablecoins are, in effect, a digital version of the eurodollar system that has helped sustain the dollar's dominance after the collapse of the Bretton Woods Agreement when President Nixon closed the gold window in 1971. The second pillar is even more interesting. What might be called the GPU dollar. In the 1970s, oil created structural demand for dollars, because all oil was priced in dollars. Today, a new, scarce commodity is emerging. Access to AI computational power, or AI compute, high-end GPU chips, AI infrastructure, and the compute plus energy stack are increasingly becoming essential inputs for economic competitiveness and growth. In this new world, GPUs are the new oil, NVIDIA is the new Saudi Aramco, and AI infrastructure is the new foundation of global economic power. If the U.S. can ensure that access to this stack is mainly dollar-denominated, it can replicate the logic of the old petrodollar order, scarce resource dollar settlement treasury demand fiscal capacity. The Catch America's strategy, to advance the dollar's reign by advancing stablecoins and AI compute, is elegant and smart. But there's a problem. Dalio's framework reminds us that innovation and even control over scarce resources don't sustain a reserve currency. At its core, reserve currency status depends on something more basic, the ability to enforce the system through a combination of military and economic might. In the 1970s, that meant guaranteeing oil flows. Today, it means guaranteeing the trade routes, physical and digital, on which the system depends. Which brings us back to the Strait of Hormuz. If the United States cannot demonstrate that it can keep the strait open, if it cannot restore dollar-based flows, then the entire dollar order begins to wobble. The crypto dollar can extend the system. the GPU dollar can evolve it, but neither can replace the foundation. The foundation is military credibility, the power to enforce our will on the trade routes that make the global economy run, which is why we almost certainly have not seen the end of this conflict. For investors, the Hormuz crisis isn't a garden variety geopolitical story. Instead, to paraphrase Soviet leader Vladimir Lenin, it's a period of weeks when decades happen. Because resources, currencies, capital flows, and technological systems all rest on the same underlying question: who enforces the rules? For over 75 years, the answer has been the United States. In the waters of the Persian Gulf today, that answer is being tested. The outcome of the test will determine the course of the global economy over the rest of our lifetimes. Tell us what you think of today's Daily Journal. PorterStansberryDirect@gmail.com. Ares Kalir, Berkeley, California. Presented by Trade Smith. Here's what you missed this week. New AI could double your portfolio by detecting the day's most profitable trades among 2,467 stocks, 90 minutes before they occur. It solves the market like a Rubik's Cube. Today's market opens perfect conditions for this new strategy. Featuring three free picks in a major event backed by four Wall Street legends. See it now, before it goes offline. Editor's note: keep in mind, we only accept advertising from publishers we know to offer well-researched ideas vetted by a legal team, excellent customer service, and reasonable refund policies. Trade Smith is one such partner. We do not, however, under any circumstances make any representations about their investment ideas or strategies, nor will we warrant them as equal to our own. We do recognize that the markets are tempestuous and, at times, ideas that we may not endorse prove valuable. Three things to know before we go. 1. The ESG bubble has popped. Environmental, social, and governance, ESG-related fund flows as a percentage of overall ETF flows have collapsed to their lowest levels since 2018. According to Morningstar, global sustainable funds hemorrhaged $84 billion in 2025, the first annual net outflow since tracking began. ESG was never a performance strategy. It was a political strategy dressed up in performance language. You cannot exclude the most profitable sectors on Earth: energy, tobacco, defense, and compete with a broad index. This is why we own Philip Morris, PM, ExxonMobil, XOM, and other energy-related names in Complete Investor and Porter's Permanent Portfolio. 2. Technology takeover of the U.S. manufacturing. The production of computers, semiconductors, and communications equipment is up 90% since 2017, while the rest of the U.S. manufacturing sector has declined 4% over the same period. The AI revolution has accelerated a long-running trend of technology playing an increasingly larger role in the U.S. economy. 3. AI now dominates both U.S. equity and credit markets. AI-related stocks account for a record 45% of the S&P 500's market cap, up 20 percentage points since ChatGPT launched in November 2022. Meanwhile, 15.4% of all investment-grade debt is now tied to AI, with AI-related debt nearly doubling since 2020 to $1.4 trillion. No single theme has ever gripped both markets this completely at the same time. Chart of the day: Kinsale Capital. Yesterday, Complete Investor recommendation Kinsale Capital, KNSL, reported Q1 earnings. The property and casualty insurance company's business fundamentals remain robust, with an industry-leading 77.4% combined ratio and 24% operating return on equity. As happens after almost every KNSL positive quarterly earnings report, shares dropped significantly. As such, its valuation is more than 30% below its five-year average, offering an attractive entry point. Today's poll: new Fed chair and interest rates. The Department of Justice announced this morning that it is dropping its investigation into Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell, clearing the way for key U.S. senators to allow a vote on Trump nominee Kevin Warsh to become the new Fed chair. Assuming the leadership changes take place in mid-May as is now anticipated, we ask readers, mailbag in yesterday's Daily Journal, Porter wrote the third part of his A Turning Is Coming in 2029 series. Readers share their thoughts. A desperate government may raid Roth IRA accounts. Franz B. writes, Dear Porter, I am worried about your projection for a 2029 fiasco. During our working careers, both my wife and I saved and accumulated substantial 401k and pension assets. When we retired together, we transferred it all to traditional IRA accounts for each of us. We activated Social Security, worked part-time, and took minimum required IRA distributions to pay living expenses and taxes. When the government created the Roth IRAs, we both started a gradual annual program to convert our traditional IRA accounts to Roths. Now this program has been completed. My concern is that a desperate government will raid Roth IRA accounts by changing taxation rules. Porter comment: I think it's virtually certain that the government will default on its promises to Social Security recipients within the next 4 years. How it will do so remains to be seen, but it will certainly include both more wealth confiscation and lower payouts, at least in real terms. Comment on Generation Theory. Bruce F. writes, I want to thank you for your excellent articles on the turnings. I especially like your focus on the economic consequences. I know you have previously discussed strategies for protecting oneself from the collapse. I look forward to future articles as the government response evolves. The four turnings should be familiar, as they work on a micro scale. As a young person, you have lots of energy. You are, hopefully, self-reliant and independent. During this first phase, you work hard and build your wealth. In the second phase, you can enjoy the benefits of your wealth. You travel, eat at fine restaurants, and, perhaps, buy a sports car. In the third phase, your body starts to demand more of your time and resources, much like a growing welfare population that politicians need to cater to. You are faced with addressing the welfare needs of your aging body. We have all seen what the fourth phase collapse looks like. If you believe in reincarnation, you can look forward to starting another first phase. Canceling European vacations. Tom A. writes, Porter, your analysis is sound. I think the situation in the Strait of Hormuz is a black swan hiding in plain sight. A friend in NYC said people are talking about having to cancel their European vacations this summer for a lack of jet fuel. Your response to selling insurance companies. Arthur G. writes, Porter, I am very upset with your response to Stan W.'s question yesterday regarding selling the property and casualty, P&C, insurers. You were very condescending and confusing in your answer to a somewhat difficult concept. However, I would venture to say that most of your partners are well-educated with graduate or other advanced degrees. We can all understand nuance if properly explained. Imho, your answer to Stan was confusing and could have been more to the point. I originally felt like Stan did. Why sell the P&Cs if their bond holdings will return more? P&Cs generally do well in a rising rate environment. It took me several readings of the original post as well as your answer to him to understand your nuanced concept as to why individuals nearing retirement might want to sell off their P&C holdings to lighten the load. I hope my understanding is correct, otherwise you will probably be patronizing me. Investors who cannot tolerate a 20% or more drawdown, I am one of them at age 71. Although still working making a large income, need to be very cautious with their stock and bond portfolios. P&C companies will have two problems when interest rates rise. First, while the rise in interest rates will increase their returns on the float investments, their bond portfolios will actually fall in value, yield up, price down. Second, we need to remember that P&Cs are simply stocks. As we all are aware, when the shit hits the fan, they will be sold off like almost every other stock in the market. Hence, lighten up your exposure. Not too difficult or nuanced to understand when simplified. Porter comment, Arthur, thanks so much for letting me know. I've got a wonderful suggestion. Would you like to try explaining it to everyone for me? Because, in at least half a dozen different emails, I've said exactly the same thing. I think there's going to be a bear market. I think inflation, higher interest rates will cause it. A war could easily be the catalyst. If we hit 5% on the 10-year treasury, then it's time to raise cash. Here's how to hedge the risks of the war. Venture Global, VG, APA, 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 CF Industries, CF, ExxonMobil, XOM, and if you can't handle a 20% drawdown this year, then think about selling P&C and raising cash now. I don't know how to say it any clearer, or I would have. But, I'm happy to publish your version. Just tell me what you want me to print. Porter, please note, the investments in our Porter & Company top positions should not be considered current recommendations. These positions are the best performers across our publications, and the securities listed may, or may not, be above the current buy-up to price. To learn more, visit the current recommendations page of the relevant service, here. To gain access or to learn more about our current recommendations, call our customer care team at 888-610-8895 or internationally at +1-443-815-4447. Thank you for being a paid subscriber to Porter & Company. We hope you enjoyed this audio issue.